Breakfast at Sally's by Richard Lemieux. Chapter 20. The Lucky Rocks. This chapter uses racial slurs some will find offensive.
I'm in more trouble than I thought, I said to myself as I walked out of the mental institution heading for the van. I had spent the morning at my now regular appointments in mental health land. These mornings were always physically challenging and often emotionally draining, but today's discussion left me in an even greater state of confusion than usual. After an hour with my psychiatrist, Bob, he admitted to me that even he had a problem. He was a very good swimmer. However, his son is afraid of water, and he has to give him a bath every day. So I wondered, if Bob couldn't get his son over a water phobia, what are the chances he'll be able to fix me? Then, after a 2-hour session, Rodney, my psychologist, speculated that I just needed some good luck for a change, and he showed me 2 rocks he carries in his pocket. He said he rubs them together in times of stress or misfortune. Were lucky rocks now a standard part of treatment for clinical depression? I wondered. And will sacrificing 2 chickens under the light of the full moon be next? I had been hoping these mental health gurus would have all the answers, some magic wand they could wave over me, some roadmap to Camelot. Instead, they had given me the happy pills, Zoloft, the miracle mind candy for depression of the 21st century. I was one of the nearly 30 million Americans taking strenolone hydrochloride, the most prescribed antidepressant in the United States. Clinical depression, as well as obsessive compulsive, panic, and social anxiety disorders in both adults and children, all taken care of with Zoloft. Well, the pills did seem to help, at least for a little. And now I was off looking for 2 lucky rocks. But the thought of suicide was still bouncing around in my mind. I got in the van and turned the key. Willow hopped into my lap and pressed her nose against the glass. It was her way of requesting that I open her window. I complied. She stuck her head out as far as it would go, and with her eyes flying in the wind, we headed for lunch at the Salvation Army. More than once, I had thought of driving over the center lane into a big truck to end my journey on this planet. It would be quick and easy and effective. But how do you do that when you are traveling with a wonderful furry white dog who loves you and whom you love back? Not to mention the trauma to the other driver. Then the heaviness that I had come to know so well began its journey through my body again as I headed downtown. A tingling in my arms began and slowly spread to my legs. The recurring thought was back. I had first experienced it the day I failed to jump from the bridge, and it had haunted me every day since. Maybe I did succeed in my fatal jump. Maybe this existence was just an illusion experienced by the dead. Or maybe I was sent back. Maybe neither God nor the devil wanted my soul in its present state. Maybe I wasn't driving down this road at all, but... As usual, my thoughts halted abruptly when I saw C. He was pushing a bright pink baby carriage across the Minette Bridge, wearing cut-off jean shorts and a pair of hiking boots, and his unruly hair was sticking out from under his baseball cap. I pulled off on the other side of the bridge, laughing, and waited for him to catch up. I hadn't seen him for a while, but every time I did, I got an adrenaline rush, knowing that something was about to happen. I felt like Jim going down the river with Huck Finn whenever C was around. Coming off the bridge, he was smiling and headed my way. "Richard, it's good to see you," he said, pushing his carriage up beside the van. I got out and looked inside his latest acquisition. It was full of shirts, pants, and socks, topped off with 3 novels and a 12-pack of Coors. 4 were already empty. "I've been to the laundromat," he said. I couldn't help but chuckle. "Where did you get the carriage?" I asked. "Where else?" he replied. "I found it in a dumpster." "I was heading for Sally's," I said. "Do you want a ride?" "Sure," he said, and began tossing his laundry into the back of the van, spilling a half-empty beer on the clean socks and shirts. We wrestled with the baby carriage, the bright pink fringe getting caught in the metal bars as we opened the hatch and put it on its side, spilling more beer. With everything finally stowed, we pulled back out of the street and headed for Sally's, hoping there were no beer-sniffing patrol dogs on duty at 11 in the morning. "Man, have I got some great news," C exclaimed. "Andy finally got his Social Security money after all these years." "Great," I replied. I had rarely seen C this animated. $67,000. $67,000? How?
"Well, he filed 16 years ago, but he would get drunk and disappear for months and not get his paperwork. Then he would come around and file the papers again, and sure as shooting, he would get lost again. It's hard to get mail when you're living on the street all the time. But now he's got it."
C told me about Andy's new apartment with a kitchen, a bedroom, a bathroom, and a living room with a TV. Andy spent most of his time in the living room. He put a mattress in front of the TV so he could drink all he wants and watch TV or read.
"That's wonderful," I said. "If you're not doing anything, can we run over there later?"
"Okay." The plan was set as we pulled into the alley behind Sally's. James and Lionel were there, having an animated discussion by the brick wall at the back of the building. James was pointing to the ground. We started to get out of the van, and when James saw C, he started towards us, waving his right hand toward his belly, beckoning us to come over.
"C, C, come over here," he said. "We need your opinion. You too, Richard."
James and Lionel had been pitching pennies against the wall, and two pennies appeared to be leaning against the red brick.
"That's mine," James said, pointing to the bright copper penny.
"And that's his," he said, pointing to the other coin. "As you can see, both coins are leaning against the wall, but my coin is obviously leaning at a steeper angle, which means the total circumference of my penny is closer to the brick."
C just laughed.
"You've got books, C," said James. "You got a book on that?" he asked.
"There's Hoyle's," C said. "But I don't have it with me, and I'm not sure it covers this particular circumstance."
Lionel needed to state his case, too. "I say it's the edge of the penny that counts, and his penny is at such a steep angle that some of his edge doesn't even touch the wall. See, see, take a close look," he added, bending over and pointing closely at James's penny. There was a moment of contemplation as we all bent in to get a closer perspective on the positioning of James's coin.
"What's the matter with you, man?" James snarled, cocking his head and staring at Lionel.
"Nothing is the matter with me," Lionel countered. "It's easy to see that this nigger, you," he continued, pointing at James, "is trying to cheat this nigger, me," he said, pointing at himself.
It was obvious to see that there was no immediate solution to this conundrum.
"How about a tie?" C offered.
"Nope," said James resolutely.
"A playoff?"
C persisted, looking at Lionel, who shook his head empathetically.
"This is for big money, C," said James. "Big, big money."
C cupped his chin and rubbed his beard. "Then you have a stalemate, boys," he said.
"What's that?" James asked.
"It means that I will try to look it up in Hoyle's and get back to you tomorrow. Anyway, it's time for lunch."
"You look it up in the book, see," James said. "Look it up."
We turned and retraced our steps back toward the building. C was chuckling to himself. Then he turned and took a few steps back to James and Lionel.
"Hey, by the way, you two gentlemen know that the N-word has been banned, don't you?" he asked.
"Oh, no, 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 baby," Lionel came back vehemently. "That's against free speech, against the Constitution. That's just for you white boys."
"Why is that?" asked C, his face totally deadpan.
"Because, you know, C, you might be disrespecting us," Lionel answered.
"I can call him that because he's my bro, man. He knows I love him."
"Well, I love you, too," C pressed on. James's face lit up, and he looked to the sky. "C loves us!" he yelled, rocking back and forth on his feet. Then he looked at his companion. "Did you hear that, Lionel? C loves us!"
"He's right," Lionel said. "He can call me nigger any time. He can call me nigger any time he wants. C is every color. He's like the rainbow. He's the rainbow man."
"I consider it a compliment," C said, nodding to the men. He was smiling broadly as we headed for lunch. The usual crowd, plus a few new faces, had gathered in the dining room. Earl and his family were sitting at the first table by the door. Katie looked at me and asked, "Where's Willow?"
"She's in the car, guarding it," I answered.
Chef Pat had prepared one of my favorites, tuna noodle casserole with lots of peas and cheese. I was hungry. As we were waiting in line, I felt a tug on my shirt sleeve. It was Katie. She extended her hand and showed me two small stones.
"These are for Willow and you," she said. "They are lucky rocks."
I was stunned and didn't quite know what to say. Katie quickly retreated to her seat beside her mother, just a few feet away.
"Thank you, Katie," I said, and then winked at her. She tried to wink back, but closed both eyes instead.
Now I had my lucky rocks. I rubbed them together and put them gently in my pocket, my mind having tuned out the chatter in the room.
"Wow! What about this moment? What did it mean? Happenstance? Coincidence?" I really didn't care. I didn't want to analyze, just enjoy the bliss. My body went through the motions of getting food and finding a table and eating, but my mind was transfixed by the gift I had been given from this little girl.
"I've got an announcement," the Salvation Army Major's voice brought me back to attention. He was standing before the group with a cup of coffee in his hand, dressed in his dark blue trousers and his crisp white Salvation Army shirt and black tie. "We're going to show the movie Mr. Holland's Opus in the chapel at 1:30 if anyone would like to see it. It's free, and it's a very good movie."
I took a sip of my coffee.
"Do you want to stay for a movie?" I asked C.
"No," he replied. "The Major will show it again. I'm sure I'll catch it next time. I'm going to visit the kids."
"The kids?"
"Yeah, the young people living in the woods off Rydell Road, out by Kitsap Mental Health. You know, Adam and the young boys you've seen in here?"
After scanning the room, I said, "They're not here today."
"You up for a spring walk in the woods?" C asked, standing up.
"Why not?" I said, picking up my tray and heading to the trash can. We said our adieus, and I thanked Katie again for my rocks.
"Not staying for the movie?" the Major asked as we passed him.
"You got popcorn?"
C asked. "Not this time," Major Baker laughed. "But that's a good idea. We are going to show it a couple more times next week."
"I'll see it then, and thank you for showing it," C said as the Major walked briskly off toward the chapel. And we were off on our next adventure.
That's tonight's episode. At this point, we must break off our reading. You've been hearing Breakfast at Sally's by Richard Lemieux. Copyright 2009. It is read with the permission of Skyhorse Publishing of New York. Join us next time on the bookshelf for Breakfast at Sally's. The bookshelf is produced and edited by Vern Windham. I'm Jeff Hazen.